are good at and what you care about. But that's a sort of luxury for many people who are unable to pay for this education that is just spiraling out of control in terms of its cost.
Yeah, well, you paint a picture in the film of sort of colleges gone wild. Can you talk about some of the lavish spending expenditures that are now a priority on campus for these schools?
That's right. We see how the financial model of higher education really encourages universities to grow bigger and to attract the student loan dollar with amenities that would be exciting for a 17 or 18-year-old who's choosing between schools. And so we see in some cases laboratories, dormitories, and in particular, Cooper Union, the school here in New York City that has been free for over 150 years, and took out a $175 million loan to build a new building at a cost of $1,000 a square foot, which is akin to a luxury hotel. So there is a feeding frenzy, as Andy Del Banco says in the film, to constantly build and make the school more prestigious in terms of rankings. And it's just a system that is structurally out of control.
I want to turn to another clip from Ivory Tower that looks at the rising cost of higher education.
Higher education in America has been very successful for centuries. But now things are changing because the scale and the cost is enormous. We have a product that is so expensive that a lot of people can't pay for it and they have to go into debt, and it just isn't viable.
The rise in student tuition is unsustainable. We cannot continue to charge significantly more year after year after year without running into some kind of a brick wall.
College tuition has increased more than any other good or service in the entire U.S. economy since 1978.
In this clip from The Ivory Tower, Anya Kamenetz explains the specific challenges millennials face today. She's the author of Generation Debt.
A lot of the older generations that criticize the millennials grew up in a time when you could go to a state university and pay your way through with summer jobs. These millennial children then got to college and realized, oh, the money's not there to pay for me. I'm not going to be able to graduate into a cushy job. And in fact, everything that I was told about the way that the world works turns out not to be the case.
Anya Kamenetz, who has been studying this, Andrew Rossi.
Yes, Anya is somebody who really has a lot of insight to provide along with the other commentators, and I think she also supports the notion that some students maybe should not be going to school and that there's a stigma associated with not going to college.
You have the story of the PayPal chief who's paying people not to go to
college?
Peter
Thiel, exactly.
Explain.
Well, Peter Thiel is the founder of PayPal. He's somebody who has been a sort of maverick entrepreneur, and so he has been giving people $100,000 to drop out of college and participate in the Thiel Fellowship, a 20 under 20 program. And it's part of it has actually spawned the UnCollege program in San Francisco, which is trying to unbundle or disaggregate the college experience into different elements.
And explain the MOOCs.
And MOOCs are a part of that. They're massive open online courses.
Massive open online courses, MOOCs.
MOOCs. And they are driven by a handful of companies, some of which are for-profit, including Coursera and Udacity. There was one experiment that was tried on the campus of San Jose State that Governor Brown supported to provide what are known as remedial classes for some students. But because the classes were delivered exclusively online with no human component, the pass rates were abysmal. And so the enthusiasm about MOOCs as a potential solution for the future took a hit as a result.
Pam Brown, as we draw to a close, your comments and what solutions do you see?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think that we have to change the story that we tell. Obama's announcement was couched in the story of the American dream, how he and Michelle made it by going to college. But in reality, we know, just as a factual statement, that it's low-wage jobs that are expanding, the ones that don't require college, and high-wage jobs that do require college are actually shrinking. So fundamentally, I think that the idea that you'll earn an extra $1 million $1,000 over the course of your lifetime is probably broken and probably doesn't hold true. So we have to actually create a public education system in this country that's free. And we're also going to have to address some of the inherent issues, the way in which this crosses racial lines and really is a very racialized system and is perpetuating and increasing all sorts of inequality.
We have to leave it there. Pam Brown, thanks for being with us, a PhD student at the New School. And thank you so much to our guest, Andrew Rossi. His film is Ivory Tower. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Matta.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Tonight's program comes to you from Luxembourg, where Kyle and I made a stop after leaving Amsterdam and before heading to Germany and Italy back in August of 2013. At the end of the program, we'll play some Luxembourg radio featuring one of their newscasts with a lot of words you might recognize. And now, Off the Wall in Luxembourg.
I'm taking the Tylenol.
When's the last time you took the Tylenol?
I broke them like an hour or two ago.
You know, it's not like a grab bag of drugs. You should stick to one. You've done an Aleve, you've done an Advil, you've done a Tylenol, all in like one stretch.
Yeah, those are the only ibuprofen and Tylenol I have. I'm just getting rid of them. I'm like a big medical drug waste bin. You just get rid of...
Like a big medical party truck is what you are.
Yeah,
you know, going, hey kids, this is what I got today.
Okay, one thing about traveling is that you're often having to do athletic things, and you have to conjure this extraordinary strength, and that's how you get from point A to point B. It's not about waiting till the cruise ship docks and these things. Real, are you listening to me, E? Real travelers have aches and pains every now and then. And right now, here we are in beautiful, beautiful, quiet, tranquil Luxembourg. I have a bit of joint pain with one of my knees. I actually have an old injury, but basically, I'm a bit sore.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, I'm listening, and so is everyone listening to the radio. They hear your words about what travel is like and how it's no picnic. Even when you're going on a picnic, that can be hard, too.
Well, it can be quite athletic.
Yeah, athletic. Now, you mentioned that. So I guess running from place to place, like a train or something, or just carrying a lot of heavy baggage.
Lifting heavy loads and then running with those loads and, yeah.
Yeah. How about sleeping in a tent for a week?
Pivoting? You can't say that.
Well, okay, I'll bleep that out, but... But, you know, I feel strongly about that because we slept in a tent for a whole week straight.
Yeah, it was a bit rustic, too. We did camp, and which I forgot about. I kind of forgot about that.
You forgot about camp?
I just forgot that the impact that that had and that it could have... probably because I wasn't carrying bags or something. I don't know.
Well, we didn't have an air mattress, I should point out, or anything to separate the ground from us except for the material of the tent. So that's 7 days of sleeping on the hard ground, and that you get some aches and pains from that.
Yeah, I mean, there's arguments for roughing it, but then also the comforts of home. I don't know which way I fall on. It just was the way things worked out.
Those people who, quote-unquote, rough it are always carrying the biggest backpacks.
Right, with big air cushions.
So I don't really want to hear it. We roughed it, all right? We had a tent. We had, you know, sleeping bags and things like that, but... We made it. We made it through, but that's why we have aches and pains, because we do that, and the athletic things you're mentioning involved in traveling. Well, I think last we chatted, we were in Amsterdam, and we were kind of confused. Actually, I got a lot more confused after that, just very briefly. Some of the things that we did were kind of interesting. Well, let's see.
Amsterdam kind of doesn't stop. And we're in a very, populous, very busy part of the town, and it's kind of always the same mood when you step out the front door.
Basically, you step out the front door, and it's the same people, or the same type of people, just kind of, in town for, you know, for drugs or for sex or something like that. They're just sort of, you know, looking in all the windows, and there's people selling them things.
It's very family-friendly, but very touristy.
It's just, it wears on you after a while. But we did do other things. You know, we went out on a boat, which was awesome.
That was neat.
Going in through the canals with some friends of ours. And just, you know, tried not to be a part of that world. But we did sort of get sucked in a little bit. First of all of our American friends were in town as well because, camp had just let out. And we had basically hung out for at least one night, I think. And then, let's see, what was that? I'm trying to remember. That was that first... time where I was really kind of hammered, that was the first night that we got back Sunday night from the camp. That was the time we went to the bar, and we won't name names here, but a certain colleague of ours put stuff in a I don't even know the words, but a big balloon type thing. Tell me, for God's sake, you give me this grin on your face like I'm some kind of imbecile.
I love you describe it. Please go
I'm
on.
I'm trying the best I can, okay? Some of us didn't have the luxury of growing up in the drug culture.
So we flew on a balloon to where? How high did we go in the balloon?
It's that, you know, I'm not a smoker. I'm not, you know, really somebody who does much of this. But it was, you know, that thing, you know, like the electronic cigarettes that it's a vaporizer. That's what it was, vaporizer.
Good.
And it was, they made a big balloon out of something. And we inhaled that a bunch of times. I didn't feel it right away, but I felt it shortly afterwards. And there was gravity issues, you know, walking through the streets. I realized I wasn't quite in control of everything I was doing. And... that was the first time we went to. It was a little coffee shop, and any memories of that particular place?
Well, it was just a small, off the main street kind of place that this person had figured out. I don't know, it was just pleasant and enjoyed it. They had some tea. It was a coffee shop. We actually got tea and all this, refreshments, and they did have a device that you could loan. You could use it. In their shop, and it's a pretty famous piece of equipment called the Volcano.
It's called the Volcano.
Yes, it's a volcano, but really it's a vaporizing machine, and they give you a big balloon that's attached to a nozzle, and the nozzle switches between a heating element and a mouthpiece. So when you're vaporizing, you have the heating element that's heating whatever kind of like dried flowers or resins you're smoking or vaporizing, and that fills it. And then when it gets to appropriate fullness, e.g. it's a big balloon, you switch it to a mouthpiece and you can inhale, and several people can share it. And it really is an efficient way to burn dried flowers or resins, and it is very clean and very easy, very not very harsh. Like, it doesn't result in, like, you're not coughing violently, you're not having kind of upsets that you might get if you were smoking dried flowers or resins in other ways. So it's kind of a really neat, efficient way. It's a bit of a treat, but if you refill it several times and go around and around and sort of run out of tea or whatever, it can be intense.
I counted 27 puffs, each of us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we had well over 20 each.
Yeah, so I didn't really gauge what the effect of that would be until I stood up and realized that things weren't the same as when I sat down. But, you know, we made it back. It just felt kind of wobbly and weird. That was interesting. But then, you know, we did some other things for a couple of days. But then there was the day that we were hanging out with a friend of ours, and we just had some desserts. I think the two of you had Strohwaffle, and I had a brownie. And that brownie, it turned out, was also from that friend of ours that had a big warning on the back saying, don't eat too much of this until you know what you can take. And it was a space brownie, hash brownie, I guess would be the correct term.
Yeah, it's cooked with some, like, ganja butter or hash.
Well, I was, you know, kind of hungry at the time, so I finished about half of it right away. And then I decided, okay, I'll wait and see what happens, because they say to wait 45 to 90 minutes. 90 minutes came and went, and I felt fine. So I finished the rest of it, and, man, that's when it really kicked me in the ass. I was feeling that same sensation again, only it was heightened. It was even more than before. And we weren't really staying up much longer, so most of that experience happened during my sleep or while I was trying to sleep. And I just remember having these feelings of paranoia and, like, heightened sensitivity to various things, either in conversation or sound. I know we had classical music playing in the room, and somehow I became part of an opera that was on the air at the time. It was very, very strange, very interesting, and again, I'm glad I did it, but it was scary. It was scary, not a place I'd like to remain in, because I realized, you know, while I was there, I realized how easy it is to lose your thoughts, to lose your grasp of reality, and to become somebody else, and it's not really what I want to do, but I do want to have the experience, I do want to know what it's like, and I encourage people to try that, but just, you know, come back and and talk about it here. It's just, you know, a very rare thing for me.
One thing about edible cannabis and, like, things that are that have a bit of a psychoactive property like that is, well, especially with food, like any food with cannabis in it, it takes a lot longer for it to metabolize, so the effects take longer to actually occur, and then for you to metabolize it and have it processed through your system takes a lot longer, and it also impacts your body a lot more, so you feel the weight of it, or you feel, like, disoriented much more, like, throughout your body than just, like, a head high or something like
right,
that.
Right, and I was feeling that, and I'm much more susceptible to that than to anything that I would smoke. So that was really something that that floored me, literally.
And it was from Amsterdam, so it could have been a very potent brownie. We all looked at the warning and sort of laughed, but I think you might have had something that was special.
Yeah, it was pretty special. If you had had that, I think you would have felt it as well. But, you know, after that, I was like, okay, I've done it enough. However, then it turned out that we had an appointment to meet this guy named Soma, who you've been following. And through mutual friends, we were able to connect and actually hang out at Soma's place. You want to tell us something about who Soma is?
Wow, who is Soma? Oh, yeah, he's just a... just a regular guy, you know, doing
he's
his
not
thing,
a regular guy. Now, anybody could be called not a regular guy, it's Soma. So let's just abandon that way of describing him.
So Soma's a legend in my book. He's an amazing, amazing person, but he is just renowned for his strains of marijuana. So he's a geneticist, like kind of a geneticist and seed saver in the cannabis culture. And he's won many, many awards at the Cannabis Cup, which is held in Amsterdam.
They have awards.
He's won awards for his hash. He's done amazing things with breeding and crossing and doing all of these things with, like, organic medicinal-grade cannabis. So, and he's actually critical of the Dutch government's government cannabis, saying that it's not grown in the right ways. And he's got some of the best genetics. He started out just with seeds that his friends had given him, and started messing around with growing and crossing things and coming up with his own strains. And he has his own strains that are like alpha seeds. You can actually buy feminized seeds that will be feminine when you grow them. He's done so much for this community and really believes in cannabis and hemp and marijuana as a healing substance, as a good, a force for good. And I knew he would be interesting and up to something. I don't know, that was basically it, is that I had read an article about him when I was kind of a teenager, and it kind of really was mind-boggling to think, I had experience growing up with, you know, pretty good cannabis in the sort of Vancouver, California area on the West Coast. And when I read through this magazine or sort of looked up Soma and what he does, I saw like amazing, beautiful colors, peach oranges and lavenders and lime greens and beautiful red and purple colors from these flowers that he was able to grow. And he's actually very famous for a strain called NYC Diesel, which is really popular in New York City. They'll call everything NYC Diesel, but it's one of Soma's strains, and it's really popular throughout the world. I mean, there's island countries like Fiji or, you know, just way out there that have people growing NYC Diesel. So it's pretty amazing that we would even think or even have the prospect of getting in touch with Soma. And we just sort of asked around to some of our journalist friends and people that were local, and we were able to connect up with him.
Yeah, surprisingly, I didn't think we'd actually be able to pull that off, but it was relatively simple. We basically headed over to his place and hung out with him. And of course, when you hang out with Soma, he's going to share some things with you. And it turns out that for the third time on this trip, I was subjected to various products that affected my mind quite a bit. First, he handed us a big joint that he had made, right? That was that.
Yeah, that was the first thing we got settled in. He said, "You want to smoke a joint or you want to roll a joint?" And I don't think you turn that down. You don't balk at that when Soma says that. I think you say, "Absolutely, I would love to partake. I would love to join you." It went from there.
Well, we talked for quite a while, but then after that, did we do the coca leaf after that? Was that the next one, or was it was it the pipe thing?
Oh, wow, you want to get into all this?
Yeah, I want to remember.
You want to remember?
Yeah.
As well as everyone online and everyone in the NSA?
Why not?
Oh, how joyous. Well, we had... he had a couple different varieties of e-cigarettes, and you see e-cigarettes everywhere. Really, they are just vaporizers with like a mouthpiece, and people are using them all the time. And I think tobacco companies or non-tobacco companies or people that have vape like resins and tobacco stuff, I don't know, they're tobacco products, I think. But anyway, they're filterless. They don't have any burning. They're all vaporizers. So they have like USB ones and all these different types of vaporizers. You can get like scented vapors and this stuff, or you can get tobacco resins. Well, turns out you can also put hash and hash oils as well as dried flowers and cannabis. Well, you can't put dried flowers in the vaporizers, but you can certainly put hash oil or hash into them instead of a tobacco or other kind of scented vapor juice, as they call it. And so he had a couple of those and offered. He's like, have you tried these? And I'm like, oh, I've seen all these kids. Like, everybody's got these e-cigarettes. I'm not into it. I don't smoke cigarettes. And I've never even tried one of the e-cigarettes. I've seen people with them, though, and they vaporize inside because it's smokeless. And so it's really popular, I think, in New York and other big cities in the States. But I've never tried it with, like, any kind of cannabis. So he offered that, and I gave that a puff, and it was interesting.
That was a cigarette? I'm thinking of the thing that was bubbling. That was something else?
Well, that was a bit later.
Oh, wow. You know, I lost track of some of the stuff we did.
Yeah, so the e-cigarettes are, like, battery-powered, and it's just a small vaporizer. But it was interesting because he was talking about the use of it, that someone without dexterity who maybe couldn't roll a joint but had a medical condition, they could administer and then teach themselves to administer cannabis, and it would actually relax them from symptoms. I think he was talking about fibromyalgia or different musculoskeletal chronic conditions and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, because I never thought of it like this would enable someone, they can just at the push of a button administer medicine that allows them to relax so that they can do other things and live their life and stuff. So in kind of a non-toxic way without smoking as well. So that was really interesting. We had some coffee with him and did a bit of interviewing and talked for quite a bit on camera, because I didn't want to just sort of try different things and I wasn't there necessarily just to smoke. I really wanted to talk to him and hear what he's got to say, especially given the things that are going on in Seattle and Washington, having legalized marijuana, as well as Denver and Colorado. I wanted to know what he thought. I'm sure other people have tried to set up interviews, or I don't know, but it's just a pivotal time for me and for what I've experienced as far as movements go in the States. So I thought, God, if I could just get a minute to talk to this guy, I would love to ask him about this. And we're doing filming, and it just actually came true. It was a dream. I was like, I'm totally floored the whole time, incredibly nervous. And so compounding that with trying some of these things, I was like, all right, we had better talk. So we had some coffee and set up the camera and talked for a good hour, I think, on camera, and we'll probably
you have to sum that up, since we're not airing that here.
Absolutely.
What did he say?
We covered a couple different things. I asked him, he was very interested and sees a lot of problems with currency and value trade, these types of things, and that's actually been a huge theme in underground cannabis markets and stuff, is what is value, what is worth something. And it's said in the black market that cannabis is worth its weight in gold. It was. Now gold is much higher. It's about $1,400 for an ounce. But in some parts of New York, I'm sure people pay about $500 for an ounce. And I know when gold is around $300, that's very close to equivalent with cannabis. And because it's not legal, you can't really deal with checks and credit cards and stuff like that. So he probably has some insight as to currency and value and how you trade for things and how you set up economies, especially under duress or under pressure. And so he was very interested in talking about some of the financial markets and just what is going on and where it's all going and the kind of future we need to build. I also asked him about some of the privacy stuff, Snowden, NSA, what he thinks about Bradley Manning. He really is tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know anything about him personally. I've read a little bit online about him. I read an article years ago. I know he's an incredible grower and, as I said, seed saver. But just to actually know him, engage someone, you don't really know who you're talking to. Plus, our friend really wasn't sure what exactly it was like. He had only hung out with him on a couple different occasions. But I think the group of us hanging out was a much different energy and it had different meaning.
Yes.
Than somebody just stopping by to try to get a bit of a interview for radio or something. So I was really blown away. We talked for quite a while and had a pretty magical conversation. We'll definitely include that in some of our recordings and things that we distribute in the future, because I think it's instructive. He also talked about patents and copyright and those kinds of things that corporations impose. And as a geneticist, as someone who's crossed and made his own varieties of seeds, like it was really interesting to talk to him about companies like Monsanto and what they're doing with genetically modified crops. I mean, he's a geneticist, basically, in crossing and mutating these strains. But there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of varieties. So just the strains he's doing exist within a larger sphere of different varieties of cannabis, whereas certain, like, tomatoes and, you know, other crops, pineapples, there's only a couple varieties. But with cannabis, there's a myriad. So even though he's making his own varieties, he's working within a much larger sphere of genetics. But he does have a craft, and, like, he does have unique genetics, and it is work. So he does sell seeds to countries and to people that can buy it legally from him. But he said interesting things about that. For example, he doesn't really care if somebody wants, he's not copywriting them. He's not suing people for using his seeds, even if they sell them. And I thought that was kind of what I thought he would say, and that's why one of the questions I sort of had an answer for, but I really wanted to capture that, because that attitude is very local. It's very much about, look, I get by, I care for myself, and I do this, I do want to make money from my work, but I'm not trying to grow so big or protect something so much that I'm going to go after people and make that my business. So that was an example of the type of conversations we had with him. And then we kind of wrapped it up. We kind of were limited for time, and it was just the first time I had met him. I wasn't totally sure that we were even going to be able to film at all. So just that was just plenty, and definitely, I mean, I'm sure we could revisit it in the future and have other conversations with him. So we shut the camera off and sort of relaxed a little bit, but we were all kind of tired.
Yeah. I was amazed by what great shape he was in, and he's 64, and he basically is very spry. His skin looks amazing.
Yeah.
And he has all this energy, and he's just paying attention to everything going on in the world, which, I figured he'd be more mystical and kind of, like, mysterious with his answers. But no, he's very upfront and direct. He comes from America. He worked for IBM, actually, back in the 60s and 70s, or maybe just the 60s, and he wound up leaving because they wanted him to cut his hair. That's really how it all started. And then he was woken to the wonders of cannabis and basically became a bit of a guru as far as that world goes, and has hair down to the floor now and 13 cats, which is really amazing. And I've never seen such mellow cats in my life. 13 cats, and they're all just hanging out, doing their thing, and he knows every single one of them, and he knows their birthdays and has relationships with every single one of them, you know, and there's their personality and all that kind of stuff, which I thought was amazingly cool. But yeah, let's get back to the drugs. So we basically hung out, had some coffee, which I guess is also a drug. I had forgotten about the e-cigarette, though, whatever was in it that was...
Yeah, he's really into health and all this, including using cannabis and stuff in cooking. I use cannabis oil in some of my cooking, like for salads and soups, especially cold stuff, because you don't want to cook hemp oil. But, and it does have really good properties to it, he uses that as part of his medicinal use, because he's actually recovering from an open heart surgery, and he has a prescription for, like, around 15 to 20 grams a day to smoke, or just in general, I believe, and he consumes it either through smoking or eating or vaporizing, and these kinds of things. So, yeah, he really looked great for having recovered. I mean, open-heart surgery is gruesome to even think about, but it really worked wonders for him, I guess, and that is integrated into his life. So we were a bit tired at that point. We had some coffees, and he showed us some of the vitamins and stuff. He makes smoothies and all these, like, kind of... He's kind of funny. He's got some videos about making smoothies for, like, the nuclear radiation and stuff, which is kind of... It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but he's serious, you know? He's really into, like, health food and picks the right things. He showed us some interesting things for like heart and brain health, like CoQ10, which is a vitamin, and like kind of a homeopathic thing. It was a supplement, basically. And but he also had this stuff from a friend who is, I think, a diplomat. And it was cocoa leaf, but ground, like finely ground, like a powder. And so he was able to share that a little bit with us. And it's just sort of like a snuff. You just put it in your cheek a little bit. And I actually had a tooth I'm working on. It's got a bit of a toothache, so it was actually a bit fortunate that it was on that right side of my cheek. And it kind of makes you a little numb, but it's not incredibly potent. And it kind of gets you going, gives you a little energy. And as he referred to it, it's like you access your left brain a little bit more. It's less like floaty, artistic, kind of woo, and that tired thing to more of energy. And that, with a little bit of coffee, was really nice.
Well, then we smoked something else, right? It was the bubbly thing, right?
Yeah, we smoked some good Dutch, probably, I think what it's called is jelly hash.
Okay.
Yeah, it's made with a series of nets, and it's made from clippings and stuff like that, and resins. And we tried a bunch of that, and it was pretty good. We used a bubbler, and that's basically a glass pipe with a little bit of water to keep it cool. And hash burns in funny ways. It's different. It takes a higher temperature for it to reach vapor and to smoke. So the utensils are just a little different, and we tried a little bit of that, and it was probably the strongest of what we had.
You think that was? I'm not sure what was the thing that really made me launch from Earth for hours afterwards, but yeah, that probably was it, right? Because but there's a lot of things that we had. That's it, right? That's everything.
Yeah, that's okay. pretty much how we left it. And
oh, yeah. No, wait, there were the candies. He gave us candy.
Oh, yeah, he's got a line of candy now that's made with a little bit of hash in it, and so it's got cannabis as an ingredient.
Yeah, so we're like eating that going out of the house, you know?
Yeah, we were eating candy as well.
It's no wonder I was floating for the next, for the rest of the night, actually. I was a bit worried because, you know, there I was again right back in that place that I was trying not to get back to, and you didn't seem affected nearly as much as I was, and I was a little worried as to why I was so affected. And, you know, I guess it's just a normal day for Soma, but for me it was like basically, you know, drug superstore as far as just taking all these things. So, yeah, I was like walking around with you on the sidewalk and just feeling very spaced out and not knowing how I was even going to sit down, let alone get through the night.
Yeah, I think he rolled out the carpet for us as guests, I think. Certainly just giving us a variety of different things and trying things that he's testing, like the e-cigarette thing that I tried. And yeah, I think basically just a little bit of everything and just giving us a little bit of variety of different things.
We finished that candy, right?
No, I still have some.
What the? Are you serious? You still have some here in Luxembourg?
I might. Why?
Well, I think it's legal here. I thought you got rid of everything before we left the country.
We'll have to eat some more.
Seriously, I thought it was really clear. Like, you should not have anything like that.
Yeah, you're kind of a ninny.
Well, I don't know what that even means, but I'm trying to stay safe, right? How much do you have left?
I don't know. I'm not keeping track.
That's like the equivalent of a hash brownie, I think, isn't
it? It's candy.
It's a brownie, yeah. They're both very nice things, but
it's homemade.
They got stuff in them that makes you not so sweet and you know, dessertish. Okay, what are we going to do with this? I don't want to take any more. Should we give it to a child?
Yeah, I think we should run up to the first child we see.
This is why you don't take candy from strangers. this is actually really the reason. No, I kind of don't want to go through that yet again. I don't want to waste candy. You know that.
Look, just be at ease.
I really didn't think we had any left. I thought it was all gone.
Well, maybe for the train ride, we'll just do all of it.
Right, because that'll make a train ride all the more enjoyable, won't it?
It's not even that much. It's like crumbs.
I'll think it's a plane ride, you know?
Is it crumbs?
It's really not that much. You're getting much.
But it really wasn't that much that we had at Soma's, and look what happened to me.
Yeah, we tried a variety of things. It was like kind of a tasting. So you can get pretty impaired from, you know, synergy of different things and different ways of consuming them. But I was okay. I enjoyed it. I was worried about you a little bit, but I also wanted you to kind of have your own journey and not have, like, someone meddling or, you know, being all over you, like, oh, you know, you got to calm down. You know, someone telling you how to be is just not really...
Yeah, because that just gets multiplied when you're like
it
that.
It compounds it. Yeah. And, I've got family with chronic illnesses, and if they get disoriented or something, you don't want to sit there and really, like, make their tunnel vision or make their disorientation worse by getting in their face and you know, getting all, like, exaggerating and things. You need to really have a guide and keep the mood positive if people go to bad places with...
No, you were there. I know we went out to dinner at some Argentinian place in Amsterdam, and we were sitting outside, and they were very calm, and the calming presence, and I felt safe there, and somehow I was able to, like, manipulate a fork and a knife. And but then, of course, you know, we couldn't stay away from excitement. It always seems to follow us around. The people next to us apparently ran out on their check, and the the owner and the busboy and everybody was running down the street, and you were the one that saw which way they went.
I pointed.
You pointed, and they caught up to them, and they got their money. The guy was very happy in the end. He invited us to have coffee, even though we had just had coffee, so we didn't take him up on that. But it was just, you know, I'm just trying to, like, not have exciting things happen around me, and I have to witness that.
Yeah, that got real. That got real quickly.
Yeah.
But it was fun. And I was just, I'm still glowing, just blown away, just really, really amazed at the opportunity and people getting together and not being crazy and paranoid about it and really believing in the things that they're doing and not making impediments because of self-importance. And I think a lot of that's going around with the stress and anxiety of some of these programs we're finding out and just news in general. People are getting very isolationist or something, and they just feel they're so important or they're so scrutinized by machines or governments that it's paralyzing. And I really love that we could cover these issues, talk to people, do interviews, do what we do, and try these things in Holland, and, you know, just have good experiences and new experiences and just sort of, like, get out of our comfort zone a little bit, because that's important and it's instructive. And I think these are the things you bring back from travel, and I don't know, I'm really amazed, and I sure hope that, you know, Soma and that relationship, that he's a friend for life, you know, like one of these people that you maybe see again or something, and you stay, like, close with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm glad we were brought into that world, and that's from you following it for so long and researching and just basically asking around and making it work. So it was definitely a lot of fun. But like you were saying, quite a few times we had to get out of Amsterdam. It really was starting to drive us mad. And we decided to stop in Luxembourg on the way to... we're heading down to Italy. We're going by way of Germany. We're going to go to Luxembourg, then Munich, then, I believe, Rome, before heading back towards Ireland, which is where we have to fly out of. What do you think of Luxembourg so far? We've only been here for a day, and we're really not going to be staying much longer.
It's very, very kind of renovated, a lot of old and new mixed together really well. So they've kept a lot of the historic buildings. It's like one of the oldest medieval areas, I think. I'm not exactly sure, but I was just reading up a little bit, and they've got some incredible ruins and old castles and things like that. And certainly here in the city, it's got a bit of that flair. And also kind of new renovation, like the sidewalks, just different infrastructure things look brand new. And they've put a lot of thought and time and money into building out their city and the infrastructure here. So on that level, it's very clean, kind of appealing, and it does have sort of touristy areas, lots of like cafes, and yeah, tourists, a lot of tourists. I don't know that I can see locals, or that I can pick them out and say like, okay, that person is from around here, especially in the touristy areas, because everybody's just sort of mingling and walking, and there's a bit of panhandling and some poverty. I think there's a dichotomy between classes, very distinct dichotomy. I know that Luxembourg City and Luxembourg in general is known for its banking, and we've certainly seen a fair share of banking,
yes,
holding and investment and this and that. It was just everywhere. They're ubiquitous here. So, yeah, to that end, and the cars, there's a lot of really brilliant cars. I'm familiar. I like kind of picking out which cars are which. I make a game of it, and I'm pretty good. I know a lot of the European brands, and I've really seen some phenomenal cars here. I'd liken it to some other cities that we've been. I think Zurich had some pretty amazing cars.
Don't try getting food after 10 o'clock at night, though.
Oh, yeah, things kind of shut down. I mean, when we got off the train, it was like a little after 10.
That was like 11:30.
Oh, 11:30. It was nothing. Dead. And it is now the weekend, but it was a Friday night.
You would think that places might be open a little later on a Friday night, but no, it's not the case. They open later, but they close at the same time, which is generally around 10.
Yeah, we had to push it. We really dug trying to find different places, and we found kind of a Cuban, kind of Western.
It's like a Cuban fast food joint.
Yeah, and that was actually pretty good. And I've never had a hamburger on a baguette like that. A baguette.
Yeah, we've had two of those. And, you know, they're not sitting well with me. I gotta be honest. They're okay. But not really the best I've ever had.
Oh, yeah, baguettes seem to be the theme. Like, I would love to get some food that is not on a baguette today.
Well, we're going
to
try Indian. Hopefully, they don't have baguettes there.
If there's baguettes there, I think we're going to have to, I don't know, leave quicker or something.
I think we noticed that nobody in Europe that we know and nobody in the States that we know goes to Luxembourg. So that's why we kind of decided, yeah, let's check that out. Let's go there. I've been here once before, but only for like a day. Kind of similar to what I'm doing today. And it's, yeah, you know, it's a nice picturesque city, but to me, that doesn't seem to be Seoul, you know. It doesn't seem to be like the grittiness that I love in a city. Some very impressive bridges that really go high up, which, you know, scares the crap out of me. But other than that, it's kind of sterile, you know. Not really a lot going on that I would want to come back for. That I can see right now from walking around and trying to look for things to do.
Yeah, you almost want them to have like a huge soccer or football team or something. I don't know, do
they? They've got one. Yeah, Liechtenstein's got a football team. So, yeah, if you have 12 people in your town, you've got a football team. But no, it's not exactly the most exciting place in the world.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like some seedy adult clubs, men's clubs, I guess, gentlemen's clubs.
A bit of that, yeah. In fact, we're by the train station, and that apparently is as real as it gets.
I've heard that there's mountains and real beauty in this country, so if we do come back, I think we'd try to spread out, get further flung within the country. I think up in the north, the Ardennes, I can't remember how it's pronounced, but there's a bunch of mountains that go across the border in Germany and other places. So there's probably lots more to explore here. And I'd love to see the like small town, kind of the rural village, that kind of thing, and how that works. And maybe like meet some families and really document that. I think that would be cool, but it's just not something we have access to right now.
And there is a Luxembourg language, and I discovered it on the radio.
Luxembourgish?
Yeah, and it's kind of like German, but different.
Yeah, it's Luxembourgish.
So there's that. And yeah, we just kind of like walked around a little bit, as much as we could, I think. I'm ready to go to Munich.
Yeah, I would love to go to Munich. I'm relaxing a little bit. I was going to photograph a little bit today. I just wasn't, wasn't feeling really compelled. It's seems like everything's kind of meant to be photographed. It doesn't have enough kind of local feel, local flavor, like you're saying. In any event, I'm not writing it off entirely. I'd love to come back, but I think we would probably visit something more far-flung. And Munich, I think we've been once, or...
Have we? I thought that was Frankfurt.
I really don't think we have. Yeah, I mean, I think I mistook Nuremberg?
Yeah.
For Munich, or that we connected there one way or the other.
We might have passed through, but I don't recall ever spending a night in Munich.
Yeah, so we're going to enjoy that a little bit. And then see if we can't make our way out on a an evening time train or something.
Yeah, we might do an overnight train into Rome. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
All right, well, let's say goodbye to Luxembourg then.
Goodbye, Luxembourg.
Präsentiert von Büro Modern. Schaffen, wohnen, leben.
Nein, nein, gehört wieder Prävision im Abgedeckt von Meteolux. Bleibt die ganze Weekend. Ich da, ich war drischen, sonnig. Temperaturen am Darm, die 23 Grad fallen nur jetzt. Trotzdem schon bis um 8 Grad rauf. Aber wie gesagt, bleibt ganz agreeabel die ganze Weekend. Ich war recht von Sonnenhofen, respektive Mänden. Und dann nur werde man jetzt müssen mal drehen, rechnen. Das sagt Sauer, Zeit für ein neues Panorama, präsentiert halt von Pierre Oppel.
Den amerikanischen Geheimdienst hat die Außen- und Wirtschaftspolitik von europäischen Staaten am Visier. Mal Spiegel Online berichtet sich dabei auf Dokumente vom Whistleblower Edward Snowden. Frankreich und Spanien haben den präsumierten Menschenhandel Rezo demanteliert. 75 Personen gehen festgeholt. Um ersten Tag von der Leichtathletik-WM zu Moskau verteidigt Kenianerin Edna Kiplagat ihren Titel am Marathon. Am 10.000 Meter Lauf von den Männern geht Goldmedaille und der Brit Mo Farah. Guten Abend. Zwei Librerien am Land Tourizent hier dieren definitiv zugemacht. Die Messagerie du Livre auf der Kloster und die Bücherkasten an der Innischgasse an der Stadt. Die verschwanden von der Bücherboutique als eh von unseren größten Problemen als Verlag, so ob nur vorhin der Marc Binsfeld, Direktor von den Editions Guy Binsfeld.
Gott sei Dank gibt es noch ein paar die ganz, ganz aktiv Librerien am unterstützen, die auch wir hoffen noch, dass die Partnerschaft sich zwischen den Editeuren und Librerien wird verstärken. Mehr das beschäftigt uns, weil muss ich immer bedenken, dass von den Librerien zu mich, hier steht nicht automatisch, dass der Konsument bei den Oper geht. Erstens mal ist oft an der Operschaft keine andere Librerie. Der Konsument geht eventuell dann rüber auf Amazon, wird ja auch nicht unbedingt da positiv was. für die Entwicklung do. An dat dat das net gut Bücher muss gewisse gin, net muss Libraire gin, die Bücher rekommandieren an Vitrine stellen, über Bücher schwätzen mit ihre Klienten, an wenn dat verschwindet, dann gesagt net gut aus. An umso mehr, wir sind ein Unisland, ein Unistaat, wie nicht will, und kann man sich ein Unisland ohne Librarie vorstellen. Ich meine nicht, das wäre eine Katastrophe, also du musst ihn unbedingt handeln.
Wie sieht ihr dann eher Rollen, das könnt ihr bald aber als Teufelskreis beschreiben, dass die als Editeurin mal auf den Weg geht, für E-Books rauszugehen und auf der anderen Seite Librarien und E-Books, das funktioniert nicht unbedingt so gut zusammen. Das heißt, sie gehen dann auch vor, eigentlich von der Entwicklung, die braucht sie aber für auch Bücher an die Öffentlichkeit zu bringen. Wie sieht ihr die Entwicklung dann für Zukunft?
Das ist ein effektiver Punkt, den ich beschäftigt habe, noch mit den Librarien überschätzt, dass er auch nicht so, dass Librarie und nicht an dem Bereich auch giffen tätig gehen, auf versichern, ein Offer zu bieten, wo ich noch bei hinten kann, an den E-Book-Bereich herankommen als Konsument. Ich meine, du musst es immer geschwärzt gehen. Mir da das klar, das ist auch eh von der Gründe, wie das man auch vielleicht mal gesagt hat, werden wir mal auch nach O fertig allgemein geht. Mir da, das ist ein gewisser Teufelskreis, den du kennst kommen.
Soweit der Marc Binsfeld, Direktor von den Edition Guy Binsfeld. Der Verlag, den 1979 gegründet gauf, editiert neuf Literatur, Sachbücher, Bolivre, Reskiden, Akanabücher, er will von nächstem Jahr un auch E-Books rausgehen. Den Interview gauf am Vierfeld von dieser Emission abgeholt. Der Morgen tisch 3 Uhr sind 4 Autos in Urstadtlander Brand gesetzt, gehen in 10 sind 3 zu Agent Parking Saint-Joseph. Police sicht zeigen, alle Informationen sind für den 113. 4 Minuten ab die internationale Aktualität der Panorama. Den US-Geheimdienst NSA interessiert sich für die Außenpolitik, die Ökonomie und den Finanzsektor von einer Reihe europäischer Länder, meldet Spiegel Online. Der deutsche Zeitschrift leihen eigenen Aussuchen und Geheimdokumente aus dem Archiv vom Whistleblower Edward Snowden 4, aus denen er 4 geht, dass der NSA ein Ranking für ihre Spionageaktivitäten gemacht wird. Er gehen Länder und Themenbereiche, je nur Priorität auf einer Skala von 1 bis 5 niedrig angestuft. Die deutsche Finanzwirtschaft packte zum Beispiel auf Platz 3. Auch Frankreich, Italien, Spanien und Japan fallen in das Kategorie Höchstpriorität zu Ländern wie China, Russland und den Iran. Die Geheimdokumente geben auch konfirmieren, dass die Institutionen von der Europäischen Union zu den Spionagezielen von der NSA gehören, so der Spiegel. Nur der weltweit massiver Kritik und den Agissementen von der NSA hat den US-Präsident Barack Obama gestern streng Kontrollen von den amerikanischen Geheimdiensten an eine bessere Protektion von der Privatsphäre von der Bürger versprach. Unabhängig Experten sollen die Überwachungsprogramme bewerten, aber einen 60 Stich ihr Rapport mit Rekommendationen vorlegen. Ein Reihe Ambassaden am Jemen bleiben bis auf weiteres zu. Deutschland, Großbritannien, Frankreich und USA schätzen die Sicherheitssituation weiterhin kritisch an. Die USA hatte gestern mitgeteilt, dass 19 Ambassaden in arabischen Ländern, die wegen Terrorwarnungen zugemacht waren, müssen den Nies opmachen. Just die US-Botschaft an der jemenitischen Hauptstadt Sanaa soll wie gesagt zubleiben, wegen dem Risiko von Terrorattentaten durch Al-Qaida, so ein Portparole vom US-Außenministerium. Beim Thema Syrien der nuklearen Aufrüstung, wie auch dem Edward Snowden, gehen Meinungen zwischen den USA und Russland weiter so nähen. Recht anfangs der Woche hat der amerikanische Präsident Barack Obama seine Präsenz beim G20-Summit in Russland konfirmiert. Kurz darauf hat er aber die Einzelentrevue mit dem russischen Premier Wladimir Putin aufgesucht. Die Außen- und Verteidigungsministerin von beiden Ländern hatten sich gestern für Gespräche zu Washington getroffen. France Even.
Das wohl wichtigste Thema bei der Entrevue Freuden zu Washington war Syrien. Russland ist ja ein von den wenigen Ländern, die den Bashar al-Assad noch immer unterstützen und liefert weiterhin Waffen. Die USA unterstützen die Rebellen mit leichten Waffen und fordern, dass der Bashar al-Assad Platz für eine Demokratie möchte. Der russische Außenminister Sergei Lavrov sagt nach der Entrevue mit seinem amerikanischen Homolog John Kerry, dass Sicherheitsgespräche ganz positiv verlaufen. Die zwei Außenministerinnen haben sich auf einer Friedenskonferenz über Syrien geeinigt. Das müsste also sehr wie möglich organisiert gehen. Et gingen sich noch ein Keer Ende des Monats gesehen für das Konferenz zu Genève 4 zu bereden. Und der soll die syrische Opposition wie auch die syrische Regierung deelholen. Die zwei Außenminister fordern Direktgespräche zwischen den zwei Parteien. Einer Themen bei der Entrevue zu Washington waren Zusammenarbeit an Afghanistan, Iran und Nordkorea, Donetsk, aber auch die nukleare Aufrüstung, Menschenrechte wie auch die Raketenaufhör. Denn John Kerry sagt, dass beide Länder gemeinsam Interessen hätten, auch von der teilweise verschiedene Meinungen gingen. Amerikanische Regierungsvertreter gesehen an der Entrevue zwischen den vier Ministerin aber weiter kein Durchbruch, da sind echter Frau, dass Gespräche nicht aufgesucht gaufen. Der Grund für die momentane Eiszeit zwischen den zwei Ländern ist der Fall Edward Snowden. Die USA fordern, dass der Whistleblower, der in Russland Asyl kriegt und die USA ausgeliefert wird, an dafür gerichtet wird. Der russische Außenminister sagt aber, dass das Thema Edward Snowden die dadurchliche Relationen zwischen den zwei Ländern nicht soll beeinflussen. Bei seiner ersten Pressekonferenz sind der drei Monate sagt der amerikanische Präsident Barack Obama, dass die Relation mit Russland will neu bewerten. Der rezente Streit über Themen wie den Edward Snowden, die Menschenrechte, Syrien und nukleare Aufrüstung wird just eng von vielen Meinungsverschiedenheiten an der letzten Moment gewirscht. Der UNO-Generalsekretär hat Konfliktparteien in Ägypten aufgerufen, sich nicht gegenseitig zu provozieren. Ein weiterer Verlust von Menschenleben müsste verhindert gehen, so der Ban Ki-moon zu New York. Die panarabische Zeitung Ashark al-Afsat hat gemeldet, dass die ägyptische Armee plant, den Access zu den Protestkauen von Morsi-Sängen Sympathisanten zu blockieren. Demonstranten sollten ausgehängert gehen. Zu Kairo hatte gestorben nicht zehntausende Sympathisanten vom gestürzten Präsident Mohamed Morsi manifestiert. Sechs Flüchtlinge sind dem Morgen vier an der sizilianischen Küste ertrunken, die Boote schüsse ein paar Meter vier an der Küste untergegangen. Wahrscheinlich konnten die sechs Affen nicht schwammen. Weitere 120 Immigranten, die im Boot waren, konnten gerettet gehen. Die Autoritäten gehen davon aus, dass es sich um syrische Flüchtlinge handelt. In Spanien und in Frankreich gaufen 75 präsumiert Membres von einem Menschenhandelreso festgeholt, sie kreieren prochiert, chinesische Immigranten für um die 40.000 Euro pro Person illegal in Europa und in den USA geschleust zu haben. Der Reso gäbe auch sexuelle Ausbeutung von den Immigranten organisieren, so ein Portparol von der spanischen Polizei. Frankreich hat seine Wachstumsprognose noch einmal nur innen korrigiert. Es kann sein, dass der PIB um 0,1% zurückgeht, am Platz, wie bis zu erwartet, um 0,1% zuzuholen, so der Wirtschaftsminister in einem Interview mit der Tageszeitung Nice Matin. Der Pierre Moscovici hat aber betont, dass Frankreich um weh aus der Rezession ist.
Yes, kids, this is Finn on Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight we're going to be talking to Matea Bayem, and we're going to be talking about her new record, Falling Theater, and we're going to give away a copy of it tonight, so stay tuned for that. She's going to be on in a couple of minutes, and we're going to just spin right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Stay tuned, baby. Turn it up.